And welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. And I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. Both your prayerful and financial contributions that have kept us on the air for over 40 years now and allows us to bring you great programming like today's show. I am joined today by Marian Amberg, and she is an award-winning journalist and book author specializing in human interest and religious topics. She's known for her sense of the odd and curious and for her humorous and engaging writing style. She's the author of the best-selling Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles, A Traveler's Guide to Catholic America, the first book in the Catholic America Travel Series, also from our Sunday Visitor. Welcome to the show, Marian. It's great to have you with us. Marian? Hello, Marian? Let me try her on the other line. Oh, there you are. You there, Marian?
I'm here.
Okay. Not sure what happened on my box here. I'm hitting buttons, and I thought I had the right ones, but apparently not. Anyway, I don't know if you heard the intro, but anyway, Marian Amberg is with us today, and we're actually going to talk about two books. She had originally written a book called Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles, A Traveler's Guide to Catholic America, published by our Sunday Visitor, and more recently, she published a book called Mary's Miracles, A Traveler's Guide to Catholic America. So it seems to be Traveler's Guide to Catholic America is a series of books. And I was fortunate to get a copy sent to me from the publisher. And these are really, when you get them, they're heavy, Marian. The paper that's used and allows for great photography. There's maps in here and everything else. And what I came away thinking was, you know, we have Catholics and non-Catholics that travel all around the world to go to these, you know, great places like Medjugorje and Lourdes and Fatima. And here we have all these places right in our own backyard that probably most people aren't aware of. And you don't have to spend thousands of dollars to travel to Europe or Asia or around the world. Some of these places, especially for us here in southeastern Pennsylvania, are within a day's drive. And certainly plenty of places to visit, right?
Well, absolutely. You know, we don't have to travel overseas to visit some great Catholic shrines, churches, and other sites in the U.S. And many of them are right within our own backyard. I grew up in western Minnesota, and about 100 miles from the Grasshopper Shrine in Cold Spring. And I didn't even know about this legendary, miraculous shrine until I was almost 30 years old. And so, you know, it was so much fun to put all of these places together. There's 507 sites, holy sites and monuments, marvels and miracles. And it's just kind of encouraging people to get on the road, pack up the kids, and just go see some of the great Catholic treasures that we have right here in the U.S.
I couldn't agree more. And I've visited in paging through the books. I've been to most of the ones here in southeastern Pennsylvania. I actually have a house in northeastern Pennsylvania that's probably within 30 minutes of the Ukrainian church in Centralia that you're right about. And I had no idea that that was there. And so I've already told my wife that we got to make plans some weekend to go over there for Mass. And
oh, that's a fabulous site. You know, that's such a great story because Centralia now is a ghost town. It was a mining town for, I'm guessing, well over a century. And then in the 1960s, the town started burning, and the town is located over a mine. There's coal seams under the town, and they're not sure exactly why it started burning under the town, but they think perhaps maybe a garbage fire was never put out in the town dump. So the town started collapsing, and the people were eventually moved out, and then, you know, they raised the churches, they raised the buildings, but there was one church standing on a hill, and the question was, would it have to be torn down? And that was the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary Ukrainian Catholic Church. And when they went and did some geological studies, they discovered the church was built on rock, solid rock, and it was not built over the coal seam at all. And to this day, they still have, even though the town itself is a ghost town, they still have Sunday services every Sunday.
Yeah, and we use a term around here a lot, saying, is that odd or is that God? And I think your books are filled with a lot of those types of stories. And in particular, another odd or God is that we happened to send our youngest daughter, wanted to go to the local Ukrainian Catholic high school, and you know, run by the Sisters of St. Basil, and so she's familiar with the Ukrainian rite. We've attended a couple of Ukrainian rite masses, so I'm looking forward to. She's out of high school 5 years now, so it'll be interesting to go to this church and experience that again. But I think that one was from Mary's Miracles. The first book was Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles. So. It's broken up by regions within the United States. There's a section on the Mid-Atlantic. There's a section on the mountain states out west, the Southeast, New England. And again, a map of each state with where these are located. And it's not just highlights that you give us, Marion. There's a whole lot of detail and a whole lot of research that went into these books, wasn't there?
Yeah, nobody will know how much research went into this book. I had to find the sites. I knew about some of them. So I had kind of like a 10-prong research device to locate these sites. There's like 10 different avenues that I researched to find the stories that I wanted. And the stories had to be either a monument, a marvel, or a miracle. And in many cases, they're all three. I wanted places that people could visit, especially kids, and come away with a sense of God, a sense of the mystical, a sense of awe and wonder. And that awe and wonder might be in the story, might be a miracle story, or it might be the artwork within a church.
And one of the stories you brought to my attention, as I said, I did not have time yet to go through every single one of these, was the story of the young boy in Montana, the young Indian boy, Little Paul, I believe his name was. Maybe you could share that story with our listeners.
That is a story that I tell in Mary's Miracles.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. What I probably should explain to the listeners, I wrote Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles, and most of it in 2018. It was slated for publication in 2020, but COVID came along. Nobody was traveling, so we postponed the release of the book until 2021. And while I was writing Monuments, the first travel book, I was just amazed at how many miraculous sites around the country are connected to Mary. And I discovered the one in Stevensville, Montana, while writing about that place for Monuments. And so Mary's Miracles evolved out of Monuments. They're longer stories, and they tell about Mary's intercession for these areas. So anyway, in Stevensville, Montana, which is in the western part of the state, in 1841, Father De Smet, the Jesuit Black Robe, and about six or seven other Jesuits, I believe, made their way into the Bitterroot Valley of western Montana. They arrived in September, and they started instructing the Indians in the Catholic faith. And there was a little boy about 10 years old. It was Christmas Eve, 1841. And his mother told him, "You have to learn the prayers, or you won't be baptized tomorrow. The Great Spirit will be upset with you." And the little boy said, "But mother, I've been trying. I just cannot remember my prayers." And he said, I'll go try again. So he went over to the teepee of, I believe it was a catechist. And as he folded back, as he entered the teepee, he noticed this beautiful woman, just radiant woman. She was about 2 feet off the floor, and she had an open heart, and the heart was beaming down at him. And he fell to his knees, and he said, oh, beautiful lady, teach me my prayer so I can be baptized tomorrow. And all of a sudden, he knew his prayers, and he could recite them. And so it was like a Christmas gift of infused knowledge. And he, like, immediately knew all of his prayers. So on Christmas Day, he was baptized with 150 other Salish Indians.
And it's a beautiful story. And you could just picture the young boy, you know, really struggling and wanting to learn his prayers, and for whatever reason couldn't, and to have them infused by the Blessed Mother must have been really incredible. Going back over to the monuments, I figured this one would be in there, and it's one of my favorite stories. And I love St. Joseph. And in Santa Fe, in the Loreto Chapel, where they had to figure out how to get a set of steps. I think it was up to the choir loft, and sure enough, you've included it in the book. The miraculous
staircase at the Loreto Chapel. That is a legend. I lived for 15 years in Santa Fe, and that is a legend. A Southwest legend. So the story goes, the Loreto sisters were building a chapel. And for whatever reason, the architect did not include a staircase to the choir loft. And it's a fairly small chapel, so you could not have a traditional staircase where you just walk up the steps. It would take up too much room. So anyway, the Loreto sisters didn't know what to do, so they began a novena to St. Joseph. He's the carpenter. And the story goes, towards the end of the novena, some people say the ninth day of the novena, a carpenter showed up with some, just basic carpenter tools and offered to build the staircase. And the staircase is circular with no central support. I believe it makes 2.5 spirals. And when the sisters went to pay the carpenter, he was nowhere to be found. There's no receipt in the Sisters of Loreto's files that they ever paid for any lumber. And some people maintain that this lumber is not native to New Mexico.
Wow. And for it to all of a sudden be there was just incredible. I think I've seen videos and what have you that show it. Here we've actually broadcast from southeastern Pennsylvania, and people might be interested to know that just in this little corner of Pennsylvania, there's some 9 places that you've listed, and throughout the state, there's another 3, 6, another 9, 11, so roughly 20 altogether, just in Pennsylvania. I've been fortunate enough to visit most of the ones here in the immediate area in Philadelphia. Of course, the Cathedral of Saints Peter and Paul, and the Shrine for Saint Rita, Saint John Newman Shrine. We put a shrine in a local church here that we're hoping one day that'll make one of your books, the Shrine for Venerable Matt Talbot. But one of the interesting
Wow, I am starting another travel book.
There you go.
So who is the name of this person? I got to write it down.
Venerable Matt Talbot. Maybe by the time the book gets published, we can make him Saint Matt Talbot. But right now, he's only Venerable. But one of the ones that I did get to visit on the other side of the state, which I had no idea it existed, and we met up with my wife's sister and her husband, who live in Dayton, Ohio. So we met halfway, which is in Pittsburgh. And my brother-in-law, when he got here, said, "Do you ever hear of this place called St. Anthony's Chapel?" And I had to be honest, and no, I had never heard of it. And when we walked in, that place was just absolutely incredible. Have you had an opportunity to visit St. Anthony's?
No, I have not. But just when I was researching these various places, I looked at every single photo I could find online. It was like I was taking a virtual tour of these sites. And St. Anthony's Chapel, it just has a marvelous, marvelous story. And there's more than 5,000 relics of saints inside this chapel. So did you have a chance to see the molar that belonged to St. Anthony?
I did.
Oh, really? It's actually on display?
Yes. Yeah, so when you walk in there, I looked it up quickly on my phone the night before we were going, and when I found out, like you said, that there were over 5,000 relics, and you come in, and literally there are reliquaries everywhere, all behind. There's some that are just walls that are filled with shelves that have the smaller reliquaries in them, and then the more prominent ones, and the ones, I guess, that would be more popular, they'll have out closer and perhaps in their own reliquary where you can get a much better view. But when you look behind the altar, and after going there, I came to find out that their daily mass is actually broadcast over Facebook. It's pretty neat when you've been there, and then you see behind the altar, which you cannot get to. There, the whole back wall is just a couple thousand reliquaries, and some of them are really, you know, big and ornate. And somewhere in there, when we were paging through it, there's a list of all the relics that are there, and they try to give you the location. And you could probably spend if you really wanted to see every one and know what it was, you'd probably have to spend a month. But to see them all, and the story behind it, with the priest from Europe that was collecting these relics as a result of one of the wars. And all these churches in Europe just started giving them to him. They were afraid that the churches were going to be destroyed. And it might have been when Napoleon was doing his thing. And so this priest said, if he would preserve them or what have you. And he sent people out to collect them. And then he gets transferred to the United States and brings them all here. And like I said, it's just incredible. And not only the relics, but the Stations of the Cross that they have are life-size. And they're actually close to the floor. So one of the parishes here, as a matter of fact, the church that has where we have the shrine to Venerable Matt Talbot, also has beautiful, not quite life-size Stations of the Cross, but they're like 7 feet off the ground. So you're looking up at them. These ones at St. Anthony's are ground level. So, if they didn't have the rail around it, you could actually, put yourself right in the station.
Right into the scene, right?
Yeah,
into the scene.
Yeah. So, no, and I know for our listeners, like I said, we're broadcasting, and most of our listeners are here in southeastern Pennsylvania, South Jersey, Delaware, and northern Maryland, that this is one of those places which is definitely within a day's drive. You probably want to drive out, visit, and then stay overnight or drive out the night before. But you can certainly do it in 2 days. One day would be pushing it. But that's a great spot. And then one for us that's halfway there would actually be the two of the spots that you actually think they were Pennsylvania because they're so close to the Pennsylvania border, but they're in Emmitsburg, Maryland, which would be the Grotto of Our Lady of Lourdes and the shrine for St. Elizabeth Ann Seton.
Yes, and the National Grotto, or the National Shrine Grotto of Our Lady of Lourdes, it's a fascinating story that the grotto actually started under the roots of a great big huge tree. That's where the original grotto was. It was like in a stream, and as years went by, the dirt underneath the tree was hollowed out, And so you could enter under the, you could enter the roots of the tree, and that's where the original grotto was.
Yeah. And it sits up above, for whatever reason, the college, the name of the college or university now escapes me, but it sits up on the hill behind it. It's quite a trek if you try to walk up. You can certainly drive up, and I was blessed to be able to attend a mass that was celebrated there as part of a retreat, and what have you. So, yeah, another one of those beautiful spots for us here in Pennsylvania. Even though it's in Maryland, it's just south of the Pennsylvania border, south of Gettysburg. So, again, that's one of the marvelous things about this book. When you pick it up, you know some of the places, like I say, I'm familiar with. And most of them I'm not. And you can certainly use the maps that are here and easily figure out a route that you might want to take if you got a long weekend, or, you know, you want to plan out a week in various states. You can certainly put that together just using this book.
And if you're traveling cross-country, and there, more than likely, there's going to be places that you've never heard of. If you're traveling through what I call the belly of the country, Kansas, Nebraska, there are so many wonderful churches, old churches on the prairies. And many of these, what I find fascinating is, and I don't mention all of this in monuments, but while I was researching these various sites, I learned that a lot of these churches, especially on the prairie, the church that you see today is the third church that was built there. The first church, more often than not, was just a clapboard church, or it might have been a sod hut. And then eventually they would build a frame church, but a lot of those frame churches burned down when lightning struck. So then about the early 1900s, 1910s, right around there, a lot of these brick churches went up. So what I find so interesting, so fascinating, is that when these immigrants came, whether they came from Ireland, Germany, Poland, wherever, one of the very first things they wanted to do was to build a church, and they sacrificed everything to build a church to give glory to God. They did a lot of the work themselves. And so, you know, I just kind of look at myself today and I kind of go, well, would I do that? You know, would I sacrifice everything I had to help build a church? So these people, these immigrants who came, were so happy to be able to worship God in the way that they wanted to.
Yeah, and as 20th, 21st century Catholics, to your point, I think a lot of us take that for granted. And, you know, our freedom to worship has certainly been not a problem in our lifetime. I think we may have problems in years to come and what have you with everything that's going on in the world. But to your point, to see, you know, what people were willing to do and give up, and I'm sure that many of those immigrants were working their full-time jobs and then helping to build the church on the weekends or after hours, you know, and pitching in, whether it was their, you know, their money or their muscle, in order to build these churches. And like you said, they weren't these, you know, beautiful Gothic cathedrals like we see in Europe, but, you know, basic churches, I'm sure, you know, ornate on the inside, but, you know, put together with materials that were nearby, and possibly now that you mentioned that, you know, they're coming from places like Ireland and Poland and Germany and Italy, and these places where they did have those kind of churches, and they were probably used to attending those kind of churches, and now it's, you know, probably one of the first things they wanted to do when they got here is, you know, hey, we need a church to go to Mass on Sunday. Let's get to it.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, like for some of the people, some of the immigrants, especially if they were coming from Germany or if they were Germans from Russia, they were coming so they could have religious freedom. They were escaping political tyranny. And so the fact that they could build a church and they could worship meant everything to them. And I know a lot of these people were farmers, and so they would go whenever they had time. They would go, and they actually dug the foundation for some of these churches by hand. So it was not easy. They didn't have a bulldozer going in and scooping out, you know, a great big huge basement.
Right.
They did it themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, didn't have that backhoe to lift those stones out when they hit one. And they probably had to change spots more than once because they couldn't get out of the ground, whatever it was that was blocking them. But, Marion, we're just about at the bottom of the hour. And again, for our listeners, our guest today is Marion Amberg, A-M-B-E-R-G. And she's written a couple of books in the Traveler's Guide to Catholic America series. The first one is Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles. We've been talking a little bit about. And more recently, she's published a book called Mary's Miracles. Both are put out by our Sunday Visitor, available at our Sunday Visitor's website. You can also get them here locally in the Philadelphia area at the St. Jude Catholic Shop. If they don't have it in stock, they can usually get these books in very quickly from publishers like our Sunday Visitor. So especially with only a couple of weeks to Christmas, maybe you have somebody in your family that likes to travel or travels for work. These would make great gifts to give them, and so that when they do travel, you know, they can add a few of these spots to their itinerary as they go from place to place. So, Mary, we're just going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation and talk about some of these other places that you've written about. For our listeners, please don't go away. We're just going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
My name is Mario Diadamo, and I have been a faithful listener to Inner Sign Radio Ministry since 1990, and to Kathleen McCarthy as principal host since 2007. Hearing the witness of Kathleen and her guests has contributed greatly to my spiritual growth. They have educated me about the tenets of my Catholic faith by presenting lay and religious leaders discuss topics that help listeners create an informed Catholic conscience. I always encourage people who are in need of prayer and companionship to listen, call in, and become part of our radio listener family by joining thousands of other people praying for your intentions. I personally can attest to the power of the prayers from the ministry. Kathleen often reminds her listeners that you are never alone because the Lord is always with us. Through this Catholic radio and internet apostolate, the Lord is indeed with us in a very tangible way. Please share the good news as Kathleen takes a leap of faith and expanding to a two-hour program to reach many more people who need to experience the love of God. Thank you.
My friends, it is you who have stood lockstep with us in underpinning our apostolate by your powerful prayers and sacrificial financial giving. We have no doubt that you surely are the angels the Lord said he would send to us, and we are forever grateful. These are urgent times, and we need to proclaim the truth of God's Word, which alone can set us free. And we need to bring the Lord's healing power, love, and mercy out to a world that is in such desperate need. As your local Catholic radio apostolate, we are humbled and mightily blessed to have your loyal support. For our new listeners who would be interested in joining us, we can be reached at 610-527-2906 or on the web at inhissign.com.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. Your host, Ken Johnston. And again, I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners. And thank you for all that you do for us here at InHisSign.com. And encourage you to come out and visit our website at InHisSign.com. And if you happen to miss a show or parts of a show and want to listen to them, you can go to the website and click on content and then podcasts and try to get all the shows up within a week at the most of when they were broadcast live. So if you happen to miss one or part of one and want to catch up, that'd be the best bet to go out and grab them. So again, our guest today is Marian Amberg, and she's written a couple of books in the Traveler's Guide to Catholic America series. The first one, Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles, and the latest one, Mary's Miracles. And we've been talking about a few of the sites that Marian's written about. And one of the questions I had for you, a couple of questions. One was, you know, the first one obviously is what was the impetus behind putting these books together? Was it something that somebody asked you to do? Are you a frequent traveler that thought your own experiences might be beneficial to others? How did you come up with the idea to put these together?
Well, true confessions. I'm a churchaholic. You know, I'm one of these people that if I'm driving around and I see a church, a country church, you know, I see a shrine, I will stop. I will stop. I want to find out the story. I want to find out who built it, why it went up. And many times there are faith stories behind, you know, a statue. I know in rural Minnesota, there's a statue in the middle of nowhere. It's one of Mary. And somebody had cancer, and they asked Mary, you know, Mary, please intercede for me. And in Thanksgiving, they erected this, I think it was probably a 9-foot, 10-foot statue of Mary. Again, it's just like off a country road. You would never know about it unless you just happened to be traveling down this road. And so I've had this curiosity or this love for churches and shrines and grottos, you know, for a long time. And I also did a lot of Catholic travel writing for magazines over the years. And one of the reasons I started Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles, I was getting really, really sick and tired of people complaining about the sex abuse crisis in the Catholic Church. And I would say, well, there is so much more to the church than that aspect. Mm. And so that was one of the reasons I wanted this book to get out there, so people could, you know, people should be proud of what the Catholic Church is in America. They should be proud of their Catholic ancestors and what they've accomplished. You know, the sisters, the religious sisters who started hospitals. What few people don't know is that the Mayo Clinic was started by a Franciscan sister. So, you know, the Catholic Church has contributed so very much to this country, and by getting people on the road to visit these shrines, churches, chapels, grottos, hopefully it will instill in them, you know, a greater love for Catholicism.
Absolutely. And myself having a particular devotion to the Blessed Mother because of all that she's done for me over the last, especially 25 years. The second book that you've come out with Mary's Miracles, is really of interest to me. In it, there's three local sites here in Pennsylvania. The Miraculous Metal Shrine in Germantown, which is less than 5 miles from my house. Then they have novena prayers there every Monday, a couple of masses throughout the day, and daily mass during the week. And just an awesome spot here in the Philadelphia area. And encourage you know, listeners, especially if you haven't been there, to go and check it out. And also the other one in nearby Doylestown, Our Lady of Częstochowa, and the beautiful shrine that's there. And, you know, you talk about miracles, Marion. When you go there, have you ever had the opportunity to come to the Philadelphia area and visit any of these?
I have not. And it's on my, the Philadelphia and Pennsylvania is on my list to hit as soon as I can hit the road next spring.
Well, very good. If you come, you've got my email address. We've communicated back and forth a little bit. Let me know when you're coming. I'd be more than happy to join up with you. But Our Lady of Częstochowa, one of the interesting things there is they have a chapel downstairs. And I'll never forget the first time I went. I was actually going to – I was being interviewed for a Catholic apostolate that I was part of. And I arrived in the area early, so I stopped off at the shrine. And they have a chapel downstairs, or an upper church and a lower church. But the one downstairs – is behind gates. It's almost like a Ukrainian church in some ways. But back behind the altar on the wall are all the crutches and walkers and canes of people that have come there and prayed and experienced their own miracles. And then they've left, you know, either left them because it happened on the spot, or sent them there, or come back and dropped them off after they received a healing. And they're all plastered all over the back wall of this chapel. And it's just a great testament to what God can do for us. Not that he's going to do it for everybody in every case, but certainly enough cases to fill that back wall of that chapel.
And it really builds up a person's faith, doesn't it, to see these testimonials, you know, of being healed. You know, you when you go into a place and you see these crutches and braces or whatever it is that people leave behind, you know, you can just feel the faith building up in you, like, you know what? I can pray for healing too. If God did this for somebody else, maybe he'll do it for me. And you know, I think, like, the faith in these places, the spirit, it's just tangible.
One of the other ones that I found interesting, and I probably should have gone through the book and got, I don't want to put you on the spot, but there's a woman in a, I'm actually in a I don't know if you call it an online prayer group, or we get together every morning for an hour and a half from 6 a.m. to 7:30, and there's people from Pennsylvania, Florida, Wisconsin, Louisiana, and it's interesting how God's connected the dots with some of these folks. But one of the women that was in Florida had asked me to grab something for her up here. And when she mailed me back a card, it was actually from the National Shrine of Our Lady at La Leche at the Mission.
Oh, La Leche. Yeah. Oh, yeah, such a fabulous place, isn't it?
Right. And I knew absolutely nothing about it. And I got the card, and it was a brief explanation on the back of the card. But you've written about it here. It's in St. Augustine, Florida. And, La Leche at Mission Nombres de Dios, which is Spanish for the name, Mission of the Name of God. And maybe a little bit about it, if you're familiar with it.
Well, St. Augustine was founded in 1565, and it's called the birthplace of America, of Christianity in America. And so when the settlers and the Spanish, you know, the Navy came ashore, one of the first things that happened was, and this is on September 8th, 1565, Father Lopez said Mass at St. Augustine, and that's why it's considered the birthplace of Christianity in America. But as time went by, around the year 1600, a statue of Our Lady nursing Jesus, Our Lady of La Leche, came to St. Augustine, and many of the Spanish colonists really took to that devotion. And over the years, especially among the Spanish, she's been, you know, very, very popular. And today, people go to St. Augustine and they pray in this little chapel before a wooden statue of Our Lady nursing Jesus. And they pray, you know, either to either for the ability to conceive a child, or if they're having pregnancy problems, they pray that everything will end up okay. And there is one woman that I quote in the book, and I've actually talked to her a number of times, and she had a child, but she wanted a second baby. And so she and her husband went to the shrine, and they prayed their hearts out that she would be able to get pregnant again. And shortly after, and in fact, they're from Pennsylvania. They went back to Pennsylvania. She had this nudge to do a home pregnancy test, and it was positive. And she goes, "Well, that can't be." So she did another test, and they were all positive. And they actually traced the time of conception back to their pilgrimage to St. Augustine. So Our Lady of La Leche is very well known for people who are trying, couples who are trying to get pregnant.
A beautiful story, and I'm glad to know more about it, especially when I talk to Dorothea tomorrow morning on our prayer group. I can say I know a little bit more. Of the places that you've written about, are there any that really jump out as, you know, more interesting? That all of them obviously are interesting or very interesting, but is there, if you had to pick one or two out that were, you know, if you're going to put together travel plans, these are must-sees?
You know, the interesting thing, people always ask me, you know, which ones are your favorites, and the truth of the matter is, the one that is my favorite is the piece that I'm writing at that moment, because if you don't put yourself, your body, and your spirit, you know, kind of at that place, if you don't really get into the spirit of the place, it's going to show. But one story that still gives me goosebumps, and that's in Mary's Miracles. I've told this to many, many people, and it's quite appropriate because today is December 7th, and that is when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And I talk about, in the book, there are four separate parishes where during World War II, they prayed what I call the War Rosary. In other words, the parishioners of these four parishes would come together sometimes daily, sometimes weekly. It depended upon, you know, what was going on, because these parishes are located in farming areas, but they would come together as often as they could to pray the rosary for their soldiers from the parish, their sons, their brothers, their husbands, their boyfriends. They would pray the rosary that they would all come home safely. And the two of the parishes are in Kansas, one is in Missouri, and the other one is the Catholic Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Atlanta, Georgia. So the story goes that at war's end, all of their soldiers came home alive. Every single one of them came home alive. And at three of these parishes, the two in Kansas and the one in Missouri, they continued the rosary during the Vietnam and the Korean crisis. Again, every soldier came home alive at these three places. So what it shows me is the power of the rosary, especially when it's, you know, when people are praying it collectively. The rosary is so much more powerful than I think we even realize. And there's a number of stories in Mary's Miracles about the rosary and how it changed lives and just miracles associated with the rosary. And that is in the U.S. It's not necessarily overseas, but here in the U.S.
So the you mentioned this Catholic Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Atlanta. I'm trying to take a quick look. Do you explain that story with the rosary in this book?
I do. You know, the story behind the Catholic Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Atlanta really begins during the Civil War. And there was a Irish immigrant priest down there. And when he heard that Sherman was going to burn Atlanta to the ground, the ire in Father O'Reilly rose up, and he threatened Sherman, and he said, if you burn Atlanta to the ground, which meant he would have burned, you know, Immaculate Conception Church, he said, all the Irish will mutiny, because most of the fighting forces in Atlanta at that time were Irish, and they, you know, they had come over from Ireland, and they were still very, very true to the Catholic faith. And because of his warning, Sherman did not burn Atlanta to the ground. So that's one story where, you know, Mary interceded for Atlanta. And the other story is, again, during World War II, there was, I don't remember his name right offhand, but there was a Catholic priest. He was a convert to the Catholic faith, and he was the pastor of Immaculate Conception Church, and he asked the parishioners to offer their communion and to say the rosary for all of the soldiers from the parish that were in harm's way.
Yeah.
And everybody came home alive. I still get goosebumps whenever I tell people the story about, you know, praying the rosary.
Nah, and I couldn't agree more, and especially in these times that we're living in now. Some of the folks that I follow and take heed to, including one priest, Father Jim Blunt, who's, you know, been asking people to pray 4 rosaries a day all 20 decades. And the power of the rosary is incredible. I have no doubts. It was the rosary that brought me back to the faith when I started praying it back in 1993 after going on a retreat. And that's why I love these books, because the Blessed Mother has been guiding me ever since then, you know, since 93, but especially since a consecration I did in 97. And, you know, all these churches and shrines and places that you've talked about in these books, as you said earlier, it's not just the architecture or the, you know, the statuary or the paintings that are there. It's the people that think it was so important to be there because they had the same faith that you and I do, that we believe that God can do anything, and that whether it's through the rosary or other forms of intercessory prayer, that over the centuries he has answered our prayers. And of course, he doesn't answer them in every single case. You know, people, you know, will still die from illnesses and what have you. But in many cases, when you've said it twice now about these folks praying the rosary, and all the men from their towns coming back from war, not a single one killed, is just incredible. And if that doesn't speak to the power of prayer, I don't know what does. And especially with the number of people who were lost, you'd think that there was at least one person from every town that didn't come home. And yet here's, you know, 4 of them that you write about that were spared.
There was another parish in Winthorpe, Texas. They did not say the rosary every week like the other parishes that I mentioned, but they had a weekly novena to Our Lady of Perpetual Help. 64 men from Winthorpe, Texas, that was roughly 20% of that rural town's population. Can you imagine 20% of your town going off to war? They prayed the novena to Our Lady of Perpetual Help, and they also made a vow to Our Lady that if every single man came home alive, and including the pastor also went to war. He was a chaplain in the Pacific. If every single man came home alive, they would build her a grotto of thanksgiving. And what they did was, and they stepped out in faith, because when the men were fighting overseas, they would send a portion of the pay back home to their parish church for the construction of the grotto. And every one of those men, every one of those 64 men came home alive. And then in 1949, they erected the grotto. And it's on U.S. Highway 281. In fact, the grotto is called Our Lady of 281, Highway 281. So it's very, very powerful. Just prayer alone is very, very powerful.
Now, I'll say. And we just got about 5 minutes left. And for our listeners, you know, God really connected the dots here with getting our guest today, Marion Amberg, with us. I think Maureen, who's our administrator here and does a lot of the work behind the scenes and, you know, make sure that this place stays together and everybody does what they need to do. And I come in over the summer, and it might have been in our Sunday Visitor or someplace else. She saw an ad for this, the book that was coming out, and suggested that I get in touch with you and get you on. And here we are on, you know, you say today's December 7th, and obviously the anniversary of Pearl Harbor. But at least here it's 6 o'clock in the evening, and we're already into the vigil for the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. And so when we were looking for a date, it was great how things worked out, and we were able to bring you on today on the vigil of this great Marian feast day to talk about your book, Mary's Miracles. And again, our guest today is Marian Amberg, and we're talking about two of the books she's written for our Sunday Visitor that are part of a Traveler's Guide to Catholic America series. The first one was Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles. And the second one that just came out is Mary's Miracles. Again, these are part of a Traveler's Guide to Catholic America. And so I love that Maureen made the recommendation and that we were able to pull this together. And I know I'm better off for it and looking forward to visiting some of these places that I had no idea existed. And I get around a little bit. We got some family in different spots in the country, down in the Southeast and in the Midwest. So now I got a few more spots that I want to visit when we go. So just in the last couple of minutes, Marian, before we let you go, anything that we didn't get to that you'd like to highlight?
Oh, golly. Mainly, just put the car and drive and go, you know. Just go enjoy the wonderful Catholic sites in this country. And I think one of the reasons some of these sites are so special is that over the century, over the decades, you know, people have prayed inside these places. And I think the very walls are just saturated with prayer. And sometimes when you walk into some of these chapels, you feel the sense of the holiness. You know, it's just there. It's tangible. And, you know, if you're having problems or you're a little bit disgusted with the world or politics, whatever, you know, just sitting in these chapels will kind of revive a person's spirit.
Yeah, and I'll share one with you. And when you get to Philadelphia, hopefully we can get together. If I can get you to the Miraculous Metal Shrine here in Germantown. We were just there the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. They have a novena every year that culminates on the feast of the Miraculous Metal. And Patrick was with us this year. And Father McKay often will say to people that he knows are either there for the first time or aren't aware of it, he'll tell them, you want to feel faith. And, you know, a lot of times, like you said, you can look around a church and you can just imagine the number of people that have prayed there and what have you. But when you go to the Miraculous Metal Shrine, the picture that you have in the book is of the actual the Blessed Mother, that and the image that's on the Miraculous Metal, and in front of the shrine is a marble altar rail, and if you kneel on that rail and then move and put your hands over top of the rail and like put your fingers on the underside, you can actually feel the worn part of the marble from where people had gripped it so tight in their prayer. And so, you know, Father McKay was the one that told me about it years ago, and it was interesting because I know he told Patrick about it just last Wednesday. He's like, put your hands around that rail, and when you do, you can feel that it's not smooth. It's rough from people having gripped it over the years.
It's worn down from people gripping so tightly, begging for, asking Mary for help.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Marion, the hour has flown by, and I can't thank you enough for spending the whole hour with us and talking about some of these great places. And we've only talked about a handful of the hundreds that are between the two books that are listed here. So, again, if you have friends and family that like to travel, these would be great Christmas presents to purchase for them. Again, the author is Marion Amberg. The books are Mary's Miracles or Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles, both published by our Sunday Visitor. Marion, thanks so much, and please do get in touch with me if you ever get out this way. I'd love to get together with you.
Well, thank you so very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks. All right. Take care, Marion. God bless, and hopefully we'll talk soon. For our listeners, I want to thank you for being with us for whatever part of the 2 hours you were able to spend with us today. It still amazes me that I get to do this. And the fact that people actually listen is even more amazing. So thank you for all that you do, not only for Father McKay and I, but for all of us here at In His Sign. And without you, we would never be able to do this. I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. And I can tell you ahead of time, it's probably one of the more well-known guests that I will have ever had, and that's Raymond Arroyo of EWTN fame. He's written a children's book. It's perfect for the Christmas season, and we're supposed to have Raymond on a while back, but I ended up having to have surgery, and we had to postpone it, but we're able to squeeze him in just before Christmas in time to talk about this great kid's Christmas book he's written. So, I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday, and until then, I pray that God will hold you in the palm of his hand. Take care, and God bless.